I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 555. The sisters are not on top of their game this week. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our very sickly podcast.
Coming to you live, filled with bacteria.
Get all the germs. Well, actually, you won't get the germs because you're listening through the internet. And right now, diseases are not transmitted through the internet.
I mean, if you're getting diseases via the internet, then you need to tell the CDC right now.
Yeah, like right now.
Right
like
now.
Like right now. Like stop listening to this podcast and do that. No, both Panda and I are under the weather, but because we love you and we love what we do, and we really just wanted to knock this podcast out, we are here. Well, you are there, and I am here.
Yeah.
And we are doing this thing right here.
Right how?
Which is talking about some nerdy stuff, talk about some games, gonna talk a little bit about some movies, and gonna talk about BFIG, the Boston Festival of Indie Games. So we got a full old episode for you this week.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm probably not gonna talk about Destiny, so super bonus.
You say that, but you've
I brought it up, but I didn't talk about it. I said that I probably am not gonna talk about it.
All right, then.
Okay, so let's just see how this episode goes and if I make a liar out of myself or not.
You may.
It's a possibility. It's happened before. You know, it could happen again. And okay. I own that about myself. First and foremost, before we get too much into BFIG, which I did not get to actually attend this year because of my infirmness. And you probably picked up your infirmness because you went.
I honestly don't know. I was, the morning of BFIG, I wasn't feeling too great. But like, I was like, I think I'm just like a little undersleep. Like I have a sleep deficit. I was like, I hadn't had any breakfast. I was a little nauseous. No, I'm not pregnant. Just in case any of you guys were thinking. I feel like anytime I mention even a sniffle, someone's like, are you pregnant? It's like, no. I know.
They're like, but you've been married since April. TikTok.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And that's the mentality people seem to have. It's like, oh, she's pregnant. She's married now. So, like, next thing comes babies.
Every infirmity that you have is a symptom of being pregnant.
Well, the funny thing was, like, I want to say 2 weeks after I got married, I got a weird morning sickness. And I only say that because I woke up. I made coffee, I took my dogs out, and I threw up in my kitchen. Like, not even like a, I felt it was coming, it was like a surprise throw up.
And I was like, those are never any fun.
No, they're not. They're not the type of surprises I like. And I'm like, I don't think anybody
likes that surprise.
And I'm sitting there, like, cleaning it up, because it's like 5 in the morning. And I'm like, this isn't normal. So, like, I call out of work, and I have an awesome boss. Like, I enjoy my boss immensely. And, like, I email her at 5:15, and she emails me back at, like, 5:20, because we're both awake. And she's like, morning sickness, huh? ... And I'm like, no, boss, no.
The people you work with are like, preggers much?
Right, exactly. Like, so yeah, she's like... I'm like, I'm calling out, and she's like, if you experience anything like these, let me know. If you experience anything like this, you're pregnant. So, like, she was, like, teasing me the whole day. And I literally fell asleep right after that and pretty much didn't wake up till my husband came home at, like, 6. And I hadn't eaten all day. But I felt good, so I didn't want to jinx it. So, like, I had me some, like, clear broth soup. I had some, like, tea with some honey in it. And, like, I wasn't going to risk it. But the next day, I felt fine.
Never risk the biscuit.
But I had a friend of ours, casually Kayla, who was like, you know, I thought I had a fever. and it was a baby. Boy. And you I was like, what? Please do not put that out there in the universe, Kayla. Are you serious right now? And like, I'm sweating bullets, and clearly I wasn't pregnant then, and clearly I'm not pregnant now. But it came out of nowhere. So I was like, this is kind of weird. I felt better during the day, but there was a lot of people at B-Fig who were coughing into their elbows, had the face masks on, like everyone had bacterial. I would have had to go,
if I had like pushed myself, I would have had to go in my face mask, and that just is not a cool look because, you know, they'd be shooting brown people now for less.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm a,
so, but it seemed like the energy overall was like lower than normal. And I think it really was because of sickness. So,
all right. Well, we'll get into that here in a hot second. The one thing I want to get off the chest while I have some voice, there's a couple movies that came out this week. And one of them I actually am excited to go see next weekend. And we haven't really talked much about it, but Kingsman: The Golden Circle came out this weekend. And if I had been feeling my druthers, I absolutely would have gone to see the movie because I freaking love the Kingsman first movie. It's one of those movies that is just like over the top fun and funny to me. It doesn't take itself too seriously, which I really enjoy. Plus, it's got the Colin Firth in it. So, and Colin Firth is a badass, is like my inside my heart, like dreamy dream British badass. That just looks like a regular bloke, but he's badass and can kill a lot of people.
I loved him in Pride and Prejudice, and then I loved him again in all the Bridget Jones movies, and I do mean, in fact, all three of them.
Wow.
Yes. Okay. Well, because in the last one, he looked very similar to what he looked like in Kingsman, so I was like, oh, hello, baby. We meet again. Yes, I'll go see Colin Firth in the theaters.
Seriously, but, bitches dig accents.
It's not the accents for me. It's really.
Oh, come on. Don't lie.
No, it's the smugness. Like, it's that polite smugness. I'm like, oh, yes, please. Like, it's unfortunate that I'm like, please berate me with your smugness because it's.
Well,
really,
I mean,
like,
but that speaks more to your character than anything else.
Right. It's just the characters he plays are just always kind of uptight and like overly virtuous and like kind of awkward. So I'm like, yes, give me more of that, please. Put that on the side of my, my crumpets and eggs. I meant Benny.
We'll have that on the side. But I am glad to see that this has now become a franchise. I think that, you know, early box office numbers are showing that, you know, we had kind of a nasty drought as far as movies this summer, when you think about it. Because pretty much, like, after Wonder Woman. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, what? Like what?
The summer movie scene was kind of like, ugh.
Because what, like, no, because, I mean, it was kind of a big thing.
Yeah, but it isn't technically a summer movie. It came out in September.
I know. That's right. True.
So, like, if you look at the period of May to August, pickings was slim. With that being said, it's really nice to see the pickup of movies coming, of stuff to want to go to the theater to. I mean, I'm still looking eyeballs forward at Black Panther real hard in February. And this is, like, one of the few years where I'm like, the winter cannot come fast enough.
I'm very... Well, I mean, it's also your birthday month, so I mean, like...
Right, I mean, like, it's the blackest...
We're not going to not hear your mouth the whole month.
It's the blackest... I'm going to be like you are with your birthday in February, because it's going to be, like, the blackest...
It's the most blackest time of the year.
Exactly. And my birthday is the first, so literally I kick off the month. I've always kicked off Black History Month, but now I'm going to kick off the blackest history month, because you know
it's like Game of Thrones. It's like winter is coming. Yes, winter is in fact February.
Wakanda
is coming.
Wakanda. The Wakandians are coming. I have some concerns about some of the superhero stuff going on. There's a lot of talk around Inhumans right now.
Oh, no, there's no talk because it got canceled before it even got aired, bro.
Well, here's the thing. It's not
like shut down.
Yet. It's not canceled yet. So let's be clear. It's just what happened was, and you have to think about it because it took me a hot second. And yes, I did this while I was infirmed, but Inhumans was originally supposed to be movies in phase 3, right? They decided to pull Inhumans out One, because superhero movies weren't doing all of the things that they expected them to do. Yes, we're looking at you, Batman v Superman. And so everybody got a little worried about superhero movies and decided, I think, to really just kind of stick their flag on their flagships, because there's a lot of concerns about Thor Ragnarok.
And not being good. The thing that I worry about with Thor is that, like, from the trailers, they're kind of trying to give it the same spin that Guardians of the Galaxy had. Like, yep. with the retro typography and the music choices. And I'm like, don't get me wrong. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2 were good because they kind of broke the mold. When you start replicating and making things feel like other things, you kind of lose that innovation a little bit. And it feels like you're pandering. And it completely turned me off.
Guardians works because the group that you've put together as Guardians, okay, are a diverse group that obviously would not 100% get along. Like, it's not like they came together like the Justice League, right?
But do the Justice League really like each other, or do they just do it for
the kids? No, like, some of the Justice League, the core, the key founders of the Justice League, like, with the exception of, you know, Bat Dude over in the corner who broods and doesn't really like anybody, at least on the surface, you know, had a mutual admiration for each other and where they came from and why they do good in the neighborhood, which just happens to be the universe for them, right? Okay. But the Guardians came together completely differently, okay? And they are a ragtag bunch. They're not clear, neutral good, right?
Right.
Okay? You got a whole lot more unlawful good then you do lawful good in that group, right? So right. It makes sense that you go a little bit more on the punchy side and the character side of each individual than necessarily you would with a Justice League, which, you know, is made up of primarily lawful good, like, across the board. Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Martian Manhunter. There's not a dark, evil, penchant for thievery bad guy who's, you know, reluctantly being good. Okay, the Guardians are made up primarily of thieves. Like, Star-Lord was a Ravager. So it makes sense for them to be more punchy, to be more animated, to be more on the comedy one-liners, zingers, and, you know, will they do the good thing or will they do the good thing with a little bit of bad thing? It makes sense for them. So it makes sense to go a little bit more towards the campy side, right?
Right.
Thor, it makes no sense to do. Like, if you just, for me, where I kind of had my big concerns with Thor Ragnarok before I watched any trailer, because I really tried very hard not to watch any trailer for Ragnarok because I didn't want it to flavor how I felt about the movies, because I own the first two Thor movies. But if you go back and you look at the poster art for Thor 1 and Thor 2, and then look at the poster art for Thor 3, stop, go back and look at the poster art for Guardians 1 and then the poster art for Guardians 2, it is obvious that for Ragnarok, they decided, let's try to make this a little more Guardians-like, because the first two posters for Thor are dark. You know, they're very much in the vein of, like, the broody DC vibe, right? They're
right.
Gray and black and red. They're heavy, you know, because they feature a lot of the material, like, that Mjolnir is made out of, the steel, almost feel like, you know, they're chiseled, versus the third movie, which is just, like, this blast of color everywhere, and looks like a 70s poster for Thor Ragnarok, which would then be a B-movie. So it has that kind of feel to it. And I think that it's an effort to try and lighten things up, because I think that, you know, the industry got really scared after, you know, Deadpool came out. Everybody wanted to make these dark and gritty superhero movies, because they're like, oh, this works. You can, in fact, do an R-rated superhero movie, and people will show up to the theater. Cool. That means the reins are off, and we can do this. And instead, what you got was the next one that you got that was big, unfortunately, was Batman v Superman, which, it being dark wasn't the problem. It just wasn't written very well.
No, it wasn't.
Like, that was Batman v Superman's problem. It wasn't that it was dark and tried to be gritty and brooding. That wasn't its problem. It just wasn't written well.
No, Batman and Superman were not written well. Neither was Lex Luthor, who was supposed to be the bad guy. He didn't seem threatening for most of the movie. And even when he was on, he didn't seem like the concern. Like, which is unfortunate, because Lex Luthor was... I would never consider Lex Luthor to be a weak adversary. Like, he's a lot smarter than they made him. And this is not to slap, you know, any blame down on Jesse, because I thought...
Right.
I thought Jesse was going to make an amazing Lex Luthor. They just didn't... The writing didn't support him to carry the character the way he should have been in that movie.
Right. You know,
which sucks.
Right, it's hard. Okay? Yeah. Because we... who are the initiated, okay, we have in our minds what Lex Luthor looks like. And for a lot of people, they have in their heads what Lex sounds like. You know, like, if you go back to the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, then your Lex Luthor is Gene Hackman.
Right.
Okay? He's a little campy, but when he switches, you know, it's almost like the Joker. When he goes from the joke to the serious, you know, you do feel a little bit scared.
You're supposed to... Right, exactly. And they didn't make him scary. Anything that sounded like it was supposed to be the poignant part of his development did not have the menacing weight of, you don't believe I can do this, but watch, right. I will do this.
And, you know, for a certain generation, their Lex Luthor was the guy, I can't remember what his name is now, but that played Lex on Smallville, which I was really concerned with. How are you going to do a Lex Luthor that's younger and, you know, is still brutally smart and also, you know, a little bit evil? And they did a great job with that.
I enjoyed it.
Believable.
You know, sometimes the CW or WB or whatever it calls itself these days, like, if you give, I feel like if you give the CW enough time with a source material, they will, on average, do it justice.
I was about to say, because there's always the exception that proves the rule.
Birds of prey.
Right. Okay.
But I'm just saying, like they did.
Even
they did
Shamar
great...
Moore couldn't say that one.
No, no, sorry.
I'm not gonna lie. I own Birds of Prey. The TV
like
series.
It was that one was that was I think they needed more time in the think tank for that one.
No, but that one they just put out way too early. Like, if they did Birds of Prey now, I think the CW would do a much better job.
Better job.
Look at,
because,
you know,
now we've got what? We've got the Flash, the Guts.
Flash
Supergirl.
Is really still very good. Okay.
Yeah.
Arrow like took a knee.
Yeah.
Took an arrow to the knee this season.
I think they'll get this season together. But the other two seasons, though. The other seasons,
because there's more than two. Because
right.
They're
the
on, like, the fifth season now. They're going into the sixth season. I don't know.
But I'm just saying, Arrow was strong up until this last one.
Arrow was strong up until this last one, and then somebody lost their goddamn mind.
Right.
Okay.
So, I mean,
and now that they have Supergirl, I do feel like they're doing a better job with Supergirl. Legends finally in this last season kind of got their legs underneath them, because the first season it was kind of all over the place, but they finally honed in and gotten themselves to a good place. And they fucking added Vixen this season, which made me so happy.
And
she's a little small, but still.
And now let's jump a little bit to Netflix a little bit, because, I mean, we were all in awe with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. And then,
yep.
You know, Iron Fist kind of
Iron
came
Fist.
Out, and we were like, okay. And now Defenders is out.
Right.
And I'm getting a lot of mixed reviews about Defenders. Like, some people are like, I totally get it, but I watched all the other, like, I watched Daredevil. So they watched everything else beforehand so that the way that they're interwoven in Defenders makes sense. So if you have not been on board since the beginning, people are like, I don't really like the direction this is going in. I think that the writing is a little jumbly, which it may be. I haven't watched Defenders yet because, one, I never watched Daredevil, and I haven't watched Iron Fist yet.
So I would say that you should definitely watch Daredevil. I liked the first two seasons of Daredevil. I have not watched Iron Fist. And I've not watched Defenders yet. They're on my binge lists, but I haven't got to them yet. Partly because, frankly, I've been going back and watching other anime series that I've enjoyed. Because in case the anime fans are not aware, which I can't believe you wouldn't be, but Funimation and Crunchyroll merged, and we talked about, you know, Funimation a while ago. But Funimation has started flooding the Crunchyroll subscription service with their anime series. So typically, with the way that I browse Crunchyroll is I go in and I look at what's new for the season. And then I decide, okay, out of the new stuff that's there, what do I want to watch? But they've been just throwing in like 2 to 3 of their anime series, full series, into the current season. So my summer season's blown up because there's stuff from like way back in the day, I'm dating myself here, that's now showing up as updated for this season, and it's actually just a Funimation anime coming over. So as an example, all of Kaleidostar is now Crunchyroll.
Wait, even the OVA? Is the OVA there?
I have to check. I don't know if the OVA's there. But the whole, all the way through the legendary maneuver in the desert when she gets her, is there. So I guess that is the OVA. Phantom Memory Corral is there.
Ah.
Yeah. Cardcaptor Sakura showed up, like...
Now, but the only reason why you're seeing Cardcaptor Sakura now is we're getting a new...
Because we're getting a new one. Yes.
One in 2018. Yes. So they want to get people... They want people to rewatch it so they get amped for the new season.
Code Geass is there, which Geass is hard to find.
I can't watch Code Geass. Every time I, like, start it, I'm like, Ninja's already told me all about this. I don't need to experience this because she's already
told
me.
You do need to experience it, though. Like, especially the rebellion part, that's really where it gets good in sound. You know,
and I haven't seen the most recent season of Attack on Titan because it's unfortunate for me because in some cases, like with Attack on Titan, after the reveal of the, you know, the fact that there are, you know, Titans in the walls, I was like, come on. In my mind, I'm like sighing really loud. It's very aspirated. And I'm just like, I wanted Attack on Titan to really be about humanity banding together about this outside threat. And oh no,
yeah, I don't think inside
the calls from inside the house the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh no.
That's what this season is.
Yeah.
But I think if they're going to do what I think they're going to do, next season is going to be the season you thought this season.
Like, I'm just a little like, ugh. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, the universe, the way that they have shaped Attack on Titan's universe, in my mind...
And the season makes sense.
No, I'm just going back from the initial premise. This was kind of one of those stories that doesn't have I don't want to say the happiest of endings. I want to say...
But it doesn't have the happiest of endings.
It shouldn't have a happy ending. Humanity is completely the underdog here. And really is not equipped to combat this threat. So we really should just see the complete de-evolution of humanity as we know it, or as they know it, because their humanity is way different than, like, yours or mine is. And, I mean, I was looking forward to seeing that desperation and characters being put on the brink of, do I look out for me, or do I look out for the bigger what is the bigger me? Like, I was looking for that existentialism. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but that's what I was looking for. And now it's like, oh no, now we have ones who actually know how to do their thing. And clearly Jaeger's dad is completely the one doing this to people. And he's clearly one of them.
Clearly he was the one doing it to them because we learned that in the first season because.
Right.
But I'm Aaron just like, was one. So.
Right.
Like that should have been a surprise.
But I
understand. What,
like, I feel like halfway through he was like, I think this is what we're going to do, but I think they would expect me to do that, so what could I do instead? And now he's running off of that, and I mean, it's not bad, but if you're leading me down this line with candy, of chocolate candy, that's supposed to lead me to a candy store, and then I end up at a Skittle store, I'm going to ask, how the fuck did I get here? And that's how I feel that middle season has kind of done for me. Like, I'm like, you gave me all these notes of this, and the end result is here, and it doesn't make a lick of sense to me, so I've zoned out of it.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I ended up binging the second season really after it was completed. And, like, everybody had already given their thoughts and stuff, which I avoided like the plague. Because I really wanted to kind of go into it again, blank, so I could form my own opinions. And when I watched it, you know, it very much felt like a filler season to me. And, you know, when you think about Naruto and Dragon Ball and those kinds of things, that, you know, you have your seasons that, you know, set up certain characters that are going to be important, or set up, you know, backstory that you need to have before you go into the whole hog thing that moves the plot forward. And mm-hmm. I felt like the second season of Titan was that, because we were setting up for the conflict. Because I think that when the third season comes out, and after you watch it, if you removed the second season, it would just feel like you were constantly going from battle, 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 and you didn't really get to know any of the middle characters or their motivations, right?
Right.
Because, like, when you think of the squad and who ended up having extra, I don't want to give it away, but, like, those people in the first season, you hardly got, like, a minute of time with them when you think of the first season. And think of the people who have extra. So you don't really, if you don't have that second season, you don't have any of their backstory to, or motivations. They just would pop up with extra and you'd be like, how the fuck did I get here? So, you know, you kind of have to look at it like the Star Wars movies. The middle movie is always the bridge to the last one. And I feel like the second season is literally and was designed to be the bridge between the first and the third season. Because, like, I feel like third season, especially the way the second season ended, is about to be batshit bananas crazy fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just be fighting and dying and fighting and dying and fighting and dying and fighting and dying. So I understand why the second season is the way it is. But for any of you guys who haven't watched it yet or have, we'd love to hear what your comments or thoughts are on the second season of Titan. But I agree. Like, I wasn't, like, every day dying to watch the next episode when it came out. I let the whole season come out first before I dipped into that. And even at that, I only watched, like, a couple episodes at a time. Whereas the first season, I was, like, waiting for that crack rock to come to me every week for the new episode. And I wasn't like that with season two of Titan. I will say that, you know, one series that I am looking forward to on the anime side of the world is the Ancient Magus Bride, which I think I've talked a little bit about this.
It doesn't sound familiar to me, but I'm also not feeling my best, so my brain's not operating at top capacity.
Okay, it's cool, it's cool. So, on Crunchyroll right now, because we're going to stay on the anime tip here before we transition to BFIG, and then talk a little bit about games coming out soon. So, Ancient Magus Bride, if you have Crunchyroll, and I think the first two videos are on Hulu, all three may be on Hulu at this point, but it's definitely on Crunchyroll. Ancient Magus Bride, they did a teaser episode, I want to say, like, almost a year ago, and it made me so mad. Because it's beautifully drawn. When you watch it, you get vibes of old Studio Ghibli with a little bit of Clamp and Kadokawa production value, like, on top of it. So, like, if you can imagine all of that. So it's beautifully drawn, and it is a very serious anime. So you're presented with our protagonist, Chise, who is a redheaded girl. And Chise has had a hard life. We don't exactly know that right off the bat from the first episode, because when we meet her, she's kind of cheerful and just cleaning up stuff, and you get a Cinderella vibe very quickly, and then there's this flashback that happens. But basically, Chise is working for a sorcerer, as a sorcerer's apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
We don't exactly know why. Like, the first episode doesn't really give you a whole lot of backdrop. It just sets you up for a delivery is made from another sorceress to this sorcerer, and it's all learning materials and stuff for Chise that comes by a raven, and as soon as she opens the door, the bird explodes, because it was a mechanical bird, it's not a real bird, and all these books and things fall, and then one of the books that falls is a book that has a very profound meaning for Chise. And Elias, her sorcerer teacher, realizes that something, that she looks different. And it's like, okay, well, why? And she's just like, it's a long story. And then the episode ends. And so you really just go through all of this setup of, you know, the animation style, understanding that she's some kind of servant and maybe an apprentice to the sorcerer. The sorcerer is mad tall and has a almost like dragon bone face for a face and red eyes, but he's super sweet and carries himself very much in a noblesse type of way. And so I got hooked because of the visual style and I wanted to know the story. And then it was like 6 or 7 months before they released the second episode, which really pissed me off. But because I was like hooked and I was like ready every week for like a month, I checked and then found out, oh no, the series doesn't actually start until October 27. These are just the teaser preview episodes. And I was like, you some of my bitches. Okay, well, when's the next one coming out? And they're like, it's not coming out till like May. And I was like, well, this sucks. Watch the second one when it came out. And it was great. And it tells more of a story of Chise when she was younger, and you get to see some of the emotional, and I would say even physical abuse that as a child she went through, because she's always been able to kind of see spirits, and nobody believed her. She and her parents were in a car accident. She was the only one that survived. Nobody in the family really wanted to take her on, but one friend of the family did, and it like broke up their marriage. She was blamed for that and ultimately was cast off to supposedly go to somebody else. So the wife came back with her kids and they were all happy because she was leaving. And you're like, that's a hell of an emotional thing to put onto somebody. And in the back end, she ends up running into this forest and running into this magical library that she doesn't realize is a magical library at the time, and meets a person who's trapped in that library. And they kind of forge a bond and become friends, and it becomes a safety sanctuary, even though it's actually not a safe place for her, and we figure that out later. And some things happen, and you're like, oh my gosh. And then it ends, and you're like trying to process everything, because where it ends is the person who was trapped in the library who is trying to get Chise out is perishing. And we don't know why, and we don't know why he's stuck in the library. And so that's the second episode. And they just released the third episode, I want to say, at the beginning of September. Because, again, the series actually starts October 10th. And it tied up why he was in the library, how she got out. And you get to understand a little bit more of Elias and Chise's relationship. And, you know, you get this feeling of, wow, now she's in a place that's safe. But actually, that's not exactly 100%. So it's just drawn really gorgeously. It's written very well. I would say that it's not necessarily a dark series, but it's not a bubbly series. So I would put it probably in the same place as, it very much reminds me of Snow White with the red hair.
Okay.
And Yona of the Dawn. So it is a serious look at the protagonist, and I would say the main protagonist, because I think Elias is going to be a very focal point in what's going on here. But it's gorgeous. It's written well. It is just beautiful to look at. I think I've rewatched the three episodes now like 3 times in a row so I could experience the whole story together, because that foundation, I think, is what's going to set off where the series starts when it starts here in a couple of weeks. So if you haven't checked out The Ancient Magus Bride yet on Crunchyroll, I highly recommend that you do, because it's a damn good one. So that's what I got. Super hopeful that Thor Ragnarok doesn't suck. It probably will, but I need my superhero movies to not suck. Inhumans wasn't canceled, but I do think that it was only ever designed, as far as ABC was concerned, to be a definitive run, single season series. Because originally it was planned to be a movie, so it wasn't something that was planned to be episodic. And I think that they just took what was supposed to be the movie, the core of what was the movie script, and decided to split it up to be episodic. Because everyone's like, oh my god, it got canceled before it even got started. And no, the promotion materials have always said complete series. So I don't think that it was ever thought that this was going to be like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that would go beyond one season.
I mean, I don't think people thought Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to last very long. And it just surprised everyone.
I don't think
ABC
did either. I think when you look at how the first season was written versus the other seasons that didn't feel as strong, like, it was obvious that, like, nobody thought that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to be popular and go past a season. And after they got a couple of episodes in and everyone was like, this is the best shit since sliced bread. They went, oh shit, we got to come up with some other seasons. Cause
like, get those writers back right now. So get them all in here.
Back. And I don't get think the they pizza. Get everybody back, right?
Get the pizza and the dew.
You know, so I think that, you know, everyone went into, oh, they're making it a series, and just assume that, you know, series get multiple seasons. They don't always. There are some things that are planned to be a single series season run. And I think Inhumans was always planned to be a single season run when they pulled it out of the movie lineup. Because you gotta remember, they pulled it out of the movie lineup because they were afraid that, like, the heroes that are in Inhumans, frankly, you know, unless you read the comics, you have no idea who these people are. You're not invested in them. Not a lot of people know who they are or have buy-in. So, you know, it kind of makes sense for it to not be a movie. And because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was able to at least be something, I think that's where they went and decided, okay, well, we'll do this single series run. And so that way we're still living up to, you know, our contractual stuff. Because, you know, they had some people already lined up to play the characters in the movies. I think that if people are making a mountain out of a molehill thing, I don't think that it was really ever designed to be anything more than just a single series season run. And the marketing materials have said that. It's just that people didn't pick up on that thing that said the complete series piece before now. So, I mean, because think about it, like, who the fuck knows who Black Bolt is?
Right. Okay? I don't know who that is.
Like, I know Medusa and Black Bolt, but again, and it's just because I, you know, was schooled by our friend Lawrence when we were having a conversation about, you know, Phase 3 way back when it was first announced before they started pulling things out. And, like, I was like, I don't even know who the Inhumans are. I didn't read any of those books. And, like, he schooled me, and I'm like, those are great stories. So I became more excited about the Inhumans movies in the lineup. Most people don't know. So, again, I'm just saying, mountains out of molehills, it's not too big of a deal. There'll be plenty of superhero stuff going on. Let's talk about B-Fig.
B-Fig was this past weekend.
Boston Festival of Indie Games.
By the time you hear this episode, it has now, because the first time B-Fig ever came to Boston was 5 years ago. So it is. I wouldn't say it's a baby con anymore. It's well into its, you know, teenage, fledgling, young adult phase.
It's already spun off C-Fig. So when you go beyond just being a one city show, you're not a baby no more.
You're not a baby anymore.
You done graduated. No more freshmen.
And I think generally every year that we've gone, it has always one-upped itself in some division, like in some measurable way. Like the first year, it was just strictly digital games. They were in classrooms at MIT. They had keynotes and like speaks in a totally separate building that you had to hightail it, like, across the street to get to. Oh,
remember that thing that we thought was a speech and it ended up being a movie?
Like, it was, like, a keynote instructional, yeah. But, I mean, like, and you had to go up several flights. You were running all over the place. The first one was kind of a shit show. But all things, you know, you can't improve until you know, until you walk through it and you
it
figure out
the
things that don't.
One.
It was.
Like, you know, and so, you know, they hadn't gotten the ability to have as much space in the athletic center.
And actually, I have to retract something, because there was a tabletop, but it was one room on, like, a random floor way at the back. So unless you knew exactly where it was, you didn't know how to get there. So
hey,
you often
it was my excuse to be able to be like, I was on MIT's campus today. So,
and I think that's what happened for a lot of people.
Yep.
But I mean, but from that benchmark, we've seen so many significant improvements for the con. Like, there's never any mix-up in terms of registration. There never seems to be any scandal or any type of controversy. People just coming to see what MIT students, or even some that aren't MIT students, in fact, come. From all over. We had a couple of developers come out from San Francisco to showcase their games here. So, like, they'll come from all over to show off their indie game that they're working on, whether it's tabletop or digital. So it's very inclusive. And once again, like, no problems on that front this year. last year, I think we suffered from too many games, I think was what we all said. Because if you went down to tabletop, you literally were stepping on people to look at tables. And then when you'd go up to the digital, which, you know, that's not an easy jaunt to go up there. So when you make the commitment to go up there, beware, wear sneakers. Stretch.
Get your cardio in all week long, people.
Like, stretch. And then also, because of all the heat, like, there'd be so many people up there that literally you would take three steps and you'd already be, like, you'd already have your pits wet. And you'd already be getting your under boobs wet if you happen to have boobs. So, like, you didn't want to stay up there very long because, you know, you could pass out because of the heat and all the traction, which, I mean, that just speaks to how many people went. But I think they were oversaturated last year. So compared to this year, it seemed like drastically less. Like an odd number less. Like, it's like when you have a party and you tell people to RSVP and they do, and then it's your party and there's like 20 bitches who don't show up, but they said they were coming.
Oh, I hate that. Deal. I hate that so much.
It's very similar to a wedding. You know, when you invite people to your wedding, they tell you to expect about 20% people to not show up, even though they say they're going to. And that's a very true statement. I can actually testify to this as I recently got, well, not recently, but I got married. And that, in fact, panned out to exactly 20% of the people I invited did not show up after telling me that they did. They were going to. So that's a true fact. But that's what it kind of felt like. And I don't even mean that in terms of people who came, you know, like attendees who came to play. I'm actually talking about developers not coming and their tables being empty with like signs of regret of not being able to show up. There are about four of those in the digital area. And I mean, they were smart enough to space everybody out upstairs in the digital, which I went up there twice this year, which is really surprising because I usually try to do one and done, very much like I just said. But I didn't feel nearly as compressed in as I did the year before. One of the only downsides to this year was there's a lot more VR demoings happening. And I tried to get in one, and I immediately got nauseous. So I couldn't even, you know, couldn't even muster putting myself into, you know, these VR goggles and like try to play these demos that looked interesting. So I would just sit there and watch other people play it and try to garner, you know, try to get something out of that without having the experience because I physically just couldn't do it. I mean, granted, VR is kind of the thing right now. So I mean, in the sense that that's where the hot tech is and that's where people want to develop for because it's such a new-ish, air quotes, concept. But there weren't too many games that we had not already seen in the digital showcase this year. There was maybe, I want to say there was probably about six that I didn't recognize. And all the other ones we have seen, you know, techie demos or, you know, concept for these other games. Like Perception was back, though it was a little bit more fleshed out. I did spend some time playing that because I was kind of about it the first time we saw the idea of being blind and, you know, having to navigate this house and this entity that is following you. And they fleshed that out a little bit more. The color seemed a little bit more rich. You were able to navigate a little bit better. They still haven't made everything interactable in the world yet because at one point you're this blind character. I believe you're a female. You are running through a graveyard and you're being pursued. And, like, you're running over these tombstones, which I actually kind of feel like as you're running, like, if you tap one, like, it should hinder your movement. And you phase right through them. You clip right through them. Okay. And I was like, so they're still not, it's still not fully done yet, but they're showing some stuff. There was a lot of, I want to say, more puzzle games this year digitally than before. There was a Feng Shui game that I think is coming to the iOS and Android, where literally if you are OCD and you're always constantly rearranging your office space or your living space, that this game may help you get all that energy out. I happen to like playing around with where things go, so you have to obey the rules of Feng Shui for each room, and they give you less room but more furniture, or, you know, the sun started in the room at this time and now over here it's different, and like you have to base it based on the end, like I guess end of the day was that trial. So like there was some interesting concepts, some beautiful art. There was a lot of beautiful art that I saw on the digital side this year, which it was, which I happen to like. If something doesn't look polished enough for me, I will not feel inclined to approach, which is unfortunate, but that's just kind of the way people are. I spent most of my time this year in tabletop, which I think also happened to us last year, just because there was a lot more variations of types of games being played. Granted, because of that, the popularity of tabletop was so much that it was really hard to navigate. And, you know, you would walk four or five times around a game you wanted to play because the playable demos for the games that had them were about 25 to 30 minutes long. So, like, if you didn't jump in at the start, you were waiting a while, which, once again, there weren't as many games in tabletop this year, but they all had playable demos, which last year, not all of them did. Some of them had, like, I have a four-minute thing I can walk you through of the, you know, base rules of this game, but we're still in manufacturing and all this stuff. But everybody who was there this year had a playable demo that was about 10 to 15 minutes long. But people just kept wanting to replay certain games over and over again, and I certainly don't blame them, because I, in fact, did that with one game in particular. It was a little underwhelming this year, and I don't know if it's just because, one, they've kind of gotten to a point where they've established what their structure is going to be, and now they just have to find ways to make that enriched and engaging and find ways to spice that up every once in a while, because eventually...
I think... B-Fig is suffering from something that... I also think that PAX West was kind of suffering from, at least from a position of somebody who does any other shows in a year, is that the show happens at the end of the year. Okay, the big thing about the Boston Festival of Indie Games was, for a while, there wasn't like a single place that independent game developers could show off their wares. You know, the Indie Mega Booth has only become the Indie Mega Booth and the Mega Mini Booth in the last 2 years at PAX East, but that's a huge chunk of space that they make available for people who are developing stuff at the MIT Game Labs, but also just independent gamers as well. Like, if you think about PAX East, remember, we were, like, both astonished at just, like, how really, you know, the back half of the expo hall was the mega indie booth,
right?
Which was rows and rows and rows of space, and then the PC gaming tournament section.
Which actually, I think the PC gaming section actually suffered, they lost space
to the indie booth, you know. And so that's a bigger show that has higher attendance. And I'm sure that a bunch of the people who were scheduled to be at B-Fig probably ended up being at East in the mega indie booth. And, you know, which was months ago, and so they got the lift that they needed, you know, because the indie guys are really there to show off their games and hopefully get people to download their demos that are available or to flat out buy their game at that point in time.
And that generally happens. Like, I think last year we all walked away with at least one thing, I think.
I left with three.
So, believe it or not, this year there weren't too many people who had games for sale.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of this was new IP that they were still developing. There was a lot of Kickstarters, you know, to get things backed. There were a lot of Indiegogos also to get things backed. Right. I've done one Kickstarter in my life. It was for a sash bag so I could put all my, like, thin credit card type things so I don't have to carry this big bulky purse, which I love the thing to death, but it always looks like I have a sling, and whenever I wear it, people think I've broken my arm, and I'm like, no, it's my bag. Like, I hate having to explain it. But I don't often buy into a concept of a game, because, like, I want to see it on shelves. I want to see people, like, fighting to get
copies. I want to get a digital code to actually download it. I want to actually play it on Steam before I'm actually going to turn over dollars. Completely understand. Because there's been much too much Kickstarter of game that has been on Kickstarter that has actually not turned into game.
Right.
So, you know, that's an easy thing to be wary of.
I've always been very cautious about that. But this year, while I think the whole presence was underwhelming, there were some very shiny gems in the mountain. So if you got to them, you got a worthwhile experience. And I'll talk briefly about them all, but I don't want to go into too many details because I'm actually writing articles about them. I know I say that every time.
I do want to kind of, you know, backtrack and finish the thought here on the shows, because I do think that there's a bit of saturation now in the trade show, con, and I think there's also overlap. And I think that that's what's hurting some of this, the smaller shows, you know? Because like I talked about at West, it was really, I could not have enjoyed my week in Seattle much more than I did, okay? And I enjoyed PAX Dev, and I enjoyed West, but, like, I was done with West really in 2 days because there really wasn't anything new or anything I hadn't touched already that was shown at West. Like, when I went to Sony's booth, okay, Sony had Mouse, the VR experience, which I hadn't been able to touch Mouse because I couldn't get anywhere near it at E3 because those lines were ridiculous. And the same thing with Detroit, but they had a big station set up for The Lost Legacy, and that game was already out. I had been playing it for more than a week before I got to West. You know, Devolver came with a bunch of stuff, as they always do, but I had already played Ruiner and Absolver earlier in the year. I did that at East. You know, there wasn't really much at the expo that I hadn't already been exposed to earlier in the year. Really, the stuff that I got exposed to that I hadn't been exposed to before was the stuff that was over at the Indiecade Mixer that I went to. Our homie Dan Echo hooked me up with an invite, so I went over to that. And that was just two floors of a whole bunch of independent game makers with their stuff that you could just play, you know, just sitting at, you know, tabletops that you could walk up to. And they had a pizza truck outside, which was awesome because I needed that margarita pizza beyond all things. But that was really where I got exposed to the most games that I hadn't already, you know, played. Ubisoft, their big thing was Far Cry 5. And, you know, that's great. That's cool. But I had already touched Far Cry at E3. So I think in the mix between the shows that are open to the public, I think right now we're super saturated in the end of the year shows versus the earlier in the year shows. And I also think that the size of the shows is also affecting the later in the year shows. You know, if you think about PAX now, you have West, East, South, Australia. A campaign has started to create PAX North and actually have a Canadian PAX, which I think they really should do. So then you'd have North, South, East, West, Australia. The timing of them throughout the year, you know, South happens before East. East is the big one on the East Coast. Like, East is the big show for us because we don't do Dragon Con, we don't do MAGFest. But, like, if you think of a person who goes to Dragon Con and West, if they don't overlap, East, and then you throw in an E3, there's really not going to be a hell of a whole lot that you're going to see new once you've gone to one of those shows. If you've gone to East, pretty much everything that's going to be at West, everything that would be at Beefing, more than likely, and everything that would be game-wise, digital game-wise, at a Dragon Con or a MAGFest, would have been at East. So there's not a whole lot new, right? You know, unless you're going for experience and tabletop. Because I do think that tabletop is distinctive to show, because I think that not a lot of people travel to promote their desktop. So their tabletop. So I do feel like that is still the thing that is unique by geographic region. But, you know, I haven't done a South. I probably won't do South. Unless I'm speaking, I probably won't do West again because we do East. They had Exploding Kittens at West and they had it at East too. I kickstarted it back in the day. So I have both decks. I've never actually been able to play the game with anybody because I haven't been able to get a card night game together to do it. So there wasn't really a reason for me to go. I like the experience that they created with the machine that you use to buy stuff, which is basically just a big block that had people in it that they would, you know, like Punch and Judy style puppeteer the actions happening in the machine. and be random, which was funny. It fit, you know, the oatmeal style and all that kind of stuff. But, like, even the We Love Fine booth was, like, a quarter of the size of the booth that was at East. And so they didn't really have a lot. And I was really looking forward to picking up this Overwatch purse. And they didn't even have it. So I was very upset. And I ended up having to leave. I ended up getting a hoodie because I needed one. And I didn't bring one because I was like, oh, it'll be fine. It won't be really cold. And then it did get cold. So I ended up purchasing a Tracer hoodie. I don't even like Tracer like that, but I did like the jacket. The experiences are definitely different. And I think that part of the reason why the attendance size is down is just at the point in the time of the year that BFIG happens, it's after all the big shows. And so if I've gone to any of those shows that have an indie experience, I probably saw those games. You know, the reason that those four developers that you say didn't show up, probably was because they ended up getting space at East or CFIG and decided they didn't need to bring all their stuff an extra day to actually go to BFIG.
True. That's very true.
And I think if you look at, you know, the amount of people that actually came out to BFIG, because BFIG is marketed very well. It's 5 years in, for crying out loud, but they do a really good job with ticket sales. They do a really good job with, you know, they've spread themselves out now, so it's easier to move chunks of people around. But I do think that what they're suffering from now is just the time of year, you know, because more people are able to get into East. And I'm sorry, like, if you've hit the mega indie booth at East and you've actually gone through everything, you've done your indie show for the year.
That very well makes a lot of sense, bro.
So it really, I think, does. You know, it really for BFIG, I think that, you know, what would be smart would be for them to not necessarily focus on September. I know they like this weekend that they pick in September because the campus isn't very heavy yet with students, you know, because it's really the beginning before real hunker down for classes and midterms and all that kind of stuff are popping up. But I think that, you know, BFIG should really look at happening in the spring window as opposed to the fall window. I think that if BFIG happened in May, because let's be honest, we don't have anything popping in the area in May. And once you get past graduation, there's nobody on that campus. So, like, if BFIG happened in May or in June instead, you get more families, because their kids are on vacation, able to come out and do it. And you'd be able to capitalize on being in between two big shows. Like, if BFIG happened after PAX East and before E3, I think that you would see a much different crowd, and you'd see...
Possibly, but I don't... Obviously, with MIT particularly, I don't know how they'd be able to pull that off in... Because that would still be kind of a high point in the school system, though. Like, there'd still be a whole lot of students there. Like, there would be other, like, there'd be other aspects to student life that may have things, have that area booked. After Memorial
Day, the only thing that you may have might be some graduation, because I know that some graduations still happen in June, so you don't pick a graduation weekend.
Perhaps, I don't know. All in all, I mean, I still think it was like a solid B- day. Like, it,
yeah,
everyone was very attentive. The content was really good. Like, the content that I sat down for, and I still kind of want to talk a little bit about some of them. The things that I sat down for and got to really kind of pick the brains of the developers and the creators of it, like, that was great. Like, I've fostered a lot of great conversations with some very intelligent and crafty people. So with that, I'm going to talk about just one of the games that I sat down for. It always seems like we always type kind of clamor around, like, the it party game that comes out of BFIG. It always seems like, you know, everyone get the fuck out was, like, the big one last year. I think the year before that, it was Henchmen, which I...
So good.
Like, you...
I had so much fun playing that.
Henchman was the shit.
I wish that somebody would just invite me over to their house to play Henchman. Hint.
I get it. And, like, the metagame, I think both you and I walked away with copies of the metagame. I think in between...
Never Henchman opened it, because I can't get anybody to play with me, but...
Anyway... So, sis, since you weren't able to come to BFIG this year, I fell on that blade, and I found the...
It's not a sword to fall on. It's a
fun... It's like a butter knife. I fell on the butter knife.
Plus, she gets to eat at Anna's taqueria, so come on.
I didn't know. I didn't even eat.
You didn't go to the taqueria?
No.
What?
A lot of our traditions didn't happen this year. We didn't go to Anna's taqueria for lunch, and we didn't go to the Asgard afterwards. Like, it was a very different vibe this year for the crew of Esh and friends who went. Because I think everyone just has live sleep. But the It party game...
It happens.
For me, that seemed to be the thing that, like you couldn't get into playing this game unless you were stalking the table, which I, in fact, did. Because I saw these two very charismatic girls at this table with flowers and, like, some somber music. And I was like, what is this? And they're like, oh, someone has died. And I was like, oh no, who's died? And she's like, you have to play the game to find out. And I'm like, I want to play. And there were already people sitting. And I'm like, I'm just going to... She's like, just do a lap. By the time you do the lap, like, we should be open. And every time I finish my lap, so it goes to show you that I walk slower than the average human, that every time I finish my lap, there was another group there. And I connect eyes with them. And I'm like, I'm going to do another loop. And I did like 6 loops before finally I'm turning the corner and I see this group leaving, and I run, which is not something I do.
You don't run.
And I run, and I plop my bag down, and she's like, oh good, finally you're here. And I'm like, yes, but the other two fellows who I was with, King Baby Duck from Boston Bastard Brigade and my husband, had not been with me. And I'm like, well, I don't care if they don't play this game. I am playing this game. I'm not leaving this chair. I'm not even thinking about shifting in this chair in case someone wants to push me. Like, this is happening. And eventually those two do show up and we do play this game. So the game is called, like I said, Someone Has Died. And it's a will arbitration game. So it's a silly little game about serious business. And what happens in the game is that you can play with, I think, up to 4, but it gets a little long after 4. So you have one person who is the estate arbitrator who establishes the who died, how they died, and what they left behind. The players all get, at the start, 4 cards. These 4 cards establish that player's identity. A bit of they get 2 backstory cards that they have to work into their character, and also they get a relationship to the deceased. And I know most people think that that means, oh, I was a secret lover, I'm like a bastard stepchild or something like that, but these are very, very different polarizing types of relationships. So in the encounter that me and King Baby Duck and I don't know what to call my husband on the show besides my husband, but in our game, I ended up being a robot with feelings. So I got to emote, which was really good, because at first I was worried I wouldn't be able to. My relationship to the deceased was that I had received their mail once or twice, so I really didn't know them. I only knew their mail. And my 2 bits of backstory actually don't even link me to the deceased. They linked me to a different character, and I actually was kind of like a Terminator robot who had been sent back in time to protect my husband's character, and I had developed feelings for that character because of that. So, like, there's this weird confliction because, like, I have this weird connection with the deceased, but I also have this weird primal romantic instinct to one of the characters, which has to play out in the game. And in the demo, you establish your character, you give your character a name and all of that stuff, and you pretty much tell the state arbitrator why you feel you deserve the inheritance of the deceased. And there are objection cards, which are purple cards, that the will arbitrator carries. And if you say something that amuses them, they can give you these objection cards, which you could play against other characters who may be making a better case than you, and you can kind of trip them up. Because upon revealing an objection card, they then have to incorporate that objection into their story, which the will arbitrator may be able to ask questions about later on, making your claim to the inheritance null and void or less compelling and stuff like that. It's got the element of voting in the same way as like Apples to Apples does or Ka does, right? But it's not about, you know, like clearly you want to impress the will arbitrator, but like you have to make the story work and you don't have nearly as much control over exactly how the cards fall. So, like, you just have to make things work. At one point, one of the characters, I think King Baby Duck's character, just wanted the inheritance because he was a voice actor for Sentai Works, because this is King Baby Duck we're talking about, and anime is kind of his thing. And he just wanted it for you know, memento's sake. And, I mean, he went the compassionate route. Like, he literally went for the feels. Like, he's like, I was connected to him. I was his AA sponsor, and he was telling this story about how he kept him away from booze like 8 times. And, like, it was like, really, it's really intense. And I mean, my character, I'm, like I said, I was a robot. I didn't really know the deceased, but I think the deceased was really into Bigfoot and, like, had all these contraptions and stuff to capture Bigfoot. And I got one of his Bigfoot monthly magazines, and then I became obsessed with Bigfoot, like he did. And I really just wanted all of his high-tech stuff because I wanted to fashion a companion for myself who would also share the same love of Bigfoot that I now had through this guy. And, like, we're just developing this story, and it's really fun. And I mean, and I think it's really interesting to find a game that can take a really hard subject, like the passing of someone, and find something light and potentially, you know, funny about it. Like, clearly there are going to be some characters who are, like, sad and depressed in the game, and, like, you can play that up to your advantage. You know, in most cases in games, you know, like, that deal with loss in some way, they're either dramatically sad or overly grotesque, or, like, they kind of take you away from the humanity of it. And I think If Someone Has Died does a really good job, well, you know, using comedy as a way to broker the conversation, it does kind of make you think about what, like, if it's your time and this has to happen. Like, I wonder if when I die, because, you know, I'm not a machine or anything, I will one day die, you will die, we will all die. Oh no, it is sad and horrible. Yes, this is true, but it is a fact of life. But I wonder if I would be silly enough to, like, kind of make my will arbitrator, like, say, hey, give me the best story as to why you deserve Pandalicious's anime collection. And, like, not that I would ever hear it, but I feel like there would be some good stories there. And this is a great storytelling game because this is really off the cuff. Like, you're given very little to go off of, and it's up to you to expand it and make it believable. And it's absolutely charming and infectious. And I did kickstart it because even though they've made their goal hand over fist at this point, I still wanted to get on the ground level of it. So I did kickstart it. I actually kickstarted it at a pretty big tier. You'd be very surprised at me, Ninja.
Yes.
So I backed it for $100.
What?
I did. Because, one, I strongly believe in this game, and a lot of their additions, which I'm never one to do collector's editions or, like, things that get me little gotsies or whatever the actual word for gotsies is. Is it trinkets? Or whatever the word is.
Yeah, you can say trinkets, you know. Gotsies, that works Gotsies. Too.
Okay. But literally at the $100 tier bracket, which, and I struggled because it was going to be between the 54, which would have given me 2 copies of the game, which I would have given you the other copy, or the $100 one, where not only do I get a copy of the game and some of the, I think you
they
get
actually
a few,
give you like a will.
Like, they actually, the 2 creators of the game who I met, actually write you an official obituary. That, like, is on, like, really nice paper, and, like, they do this whole, like, yeah, like, they do this whole obituary about how you die. And, like, I made sure to email them, and I'm like, look, I'm like, we had a really great conversation. I'm like, I truly believe in what you're doing. I can't wait for this obituary, because I'm really curious to see what comes out of it. Because, I mean, they built this whole game, so, like, they're both very creative girls. So, like, I will not be unsatisfied but with what comes out. If you actually kickstart above 100, which, I mean, I don't know. But if you did, I think one of them, the game comes in like a like miniature coffin that all the bits fit into. You still get the obituary. I also think in one of them, you get a hand-sewn doll that you can cry all your sad tears into. Like, these are, like, really thought-provoking, like, tears that I really liked. Like, this is a lot of thought that goes into them. So, like, I can't imagine this team, if they keep working together on games, that they will be bad. Like, there's so much thought into this, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and a lot of people did. So that was one of the games that I got hands-on with. I played that with KBD. I think he actually went and got an interview with them. So you might hear that on his show. That game and those girls were amazing. So, like, I really kind of wanted to take some time to talk about them today. And and you'll see an article about that game where I'll talk a little bit more in depth about that. But there are other games that I played that were just as, you know, cute and refreshing and also deep and terrifying. And also one that I think kind of rivals or could rival Henchmen, which I don't want to talk about right here because I want to give it its full attention.
Yeah, get it on the site. And yeah. We're just about out of time here anyway. So that's a good place to leave it. I like a good cliffhanger. You've got stuff that's coming on our site. So you guys better make sure that you've bookmarked our site. www.electricsishit.com. You like how I did that segue right there?
Yes, I did.
Like a professional. You can check out all of our reviews, previews, and editorials, including the pieces from BFIG that Panda's working on. And I'm sure there'll be a couple of things from KBD as well. So make sure that you bookmark our site, that you get our podcast. If you enjoyed this week's show, you'll enjoy our entire archive. Well, most of our archive, because really year one was something special. But make sure that you subscribe to our podcast, either in iTunes on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast Electric Sisterhood and subscribing. You can also get our podcast on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, VogNetwork.com, or any fine place where podcasts are aggregated. You can find our show. So whichever way you like to get your stuff, just make sure that you grab a hold of our show there. More places coming soon, but website, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, VogNetwork.com. All great places to get our show and listen to some other great entertainment. You can also check out our reviews and editorials in Apple News on your iOS device. Just look for Electric Sisterhood and subscribe. You can hit us up on our social because we like to be social. You can ask us questions, check out some of our reviews and the stuff that we're creating and sharing on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh, on our Instagram, which Instagram is now popping daily with stuff, so please follow us on Instagram, and that's at ESH News on the Instagrams, as well as on the Twitters, so please follow and like and share and all that good stuff. We've got more video content on our YouTube channel, so make sure that you subscribe and hit the notification bell on YouTube at youtube.com/electricsisterhood to check out our new content that we're putting out. We've got a bunch of our Overcooked videos now on our page, so make sure that you check them out, especially the shorter ones. They're easier to digest, but super fun. Had a lot of great time putting those together, and if there's anything that you'd like to see us play, hit us up on our social and let us know what you think we should play next as our next Let's Play, and maybe we will. We'll give you a shout-out if we do. If you enjoy what we do across all of our social and our site and this show, then make sure that you check out all the other great shows that are part of our network. And that's KBD over at b3crew.com. He's got a weekly podcast called No Borders, No Race. You should definitely check that out. It comes out bi-weekly right now, and it is a fantastic show if you want to hear some really great tunes spin from indie, pop, J-pop, K-pop music, and more, including rock. Definitely make sure that you check his stuff out. On Wednesdays, our homie Hamsterman 2049 streams live at 9 p.m. Eastern on Twitch, twitch.tv/hamsterman2049. Make sure that you check out his streams. Jump into chat. Be part of them live. He plays old stuff and new stuff every single week. You can get the link really quickly on our Facebook page every Wednesday night. He puts it out about 10 minutes before he goes live, so that way you can be part of the chat and check him out and check out some of the great stuff that he's creating over at smashrook.com. Our homie Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review, my favorite TV recap show on YouTube. Like, comment, subscribe. Be part of his live chats when he does his recaps. They are the funniest and most enjoyable things that I've ever been a part of on YouTube. Make sure you check him out and his website, issuesprogram.com. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com. keeping you up to date with the stuff that nerves crave. Anime, manga, comic books, video games, you name it. If it's nerdy, they're talking about it over at nerdcrave.com. So make sure that you bookmark all of our sites, that you jump on and check out all of our channels and streams. Be part of our family and network. And hit us up if there's something that you want us to check out and bring to the community, because we do this for you as much as we do it for ourselves. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time,
titties.